Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money on this beautiful Monday morning here in Park City on the last day of July 2017. I'm Doug Wells. Renee Bodley is on vacation this morning. I am joined by my friend and fellow Board of Trustee member, Roger Goldman. Roger, thanks for stepping in and co-hosting today's show.
Good morning, Doug. It's a pleasure to be here, and it is indeed a beautiful day. You can feel the town doing a bit of an exhale after what was an incredibly busy weekend.
Boy, it was just packed, wasn't it? I don't know if you saw any of the soccer games, but it was so much fun to watch those kids play. They were so good, and the weather was perfect for them.
But they did make the lines a lot longer at the Starbucks over the weekend.
Unfortunately, it was crowded, but good news is business is booming. Speaking of business, Mountain Money is a business show. We've got some interesting guests for you this morning. Our first guest is going to be Robert Groh. He is the president and chief executive officer of Envision Utah. And Envision Utah is really bringing communities together here in Utah to talk about the big issues and what Utah is going to look like in the coming decade and in the coming 30 or 40 years as well.
And later in the show, we will have Dawn Holtz from Christie Sports to talk about some of the new things that are going on there. And we will also have Susan Lyle, who is with Natural Grocers, which is a natural grocery store chain that will be opening a brand new location in Heber. And we're looking forward to understanding a little bit about who they are and how that will operate.
All right, you're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. This summer, Park City Mountain offers a variety of events for the whole family, including the annual July 4th celebration and fireworks, summer concert series, and weekly Wednesday Farmers Market. The full calendar of Park City Mountain events is available at parkcitymountain.com.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Our first guest this morning is Robert Groh. He is the president and chief executive officer of Envision Utah. Robert, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing well. Robert, let's start off with Envision Utah. Your organization is one that we hear about quite often. Tell us from your standpoint, what is the mission of Envision Utah?
Well, Envision Utah is actually 20 years old this year. We're having a great annual or a 20th birthday party in October. We came together as a group of concerned citizens looking at the future, looking out far enough we could really tell what major decisions we could make to preserve the quality of life, continue strong economic growth and job creation. And over the last 20 years, we've helped everybody from small cities and towns to the entire region look at their future and help make better decisions about how we could implement the future we will want and our children and grandchildren will want. So we've been here about 20 years, and we are not a traditional planning agency because we are a consensus-based, bring-people-together group that looks out longer range at the big-picture questions of our region.
Okay, that's a great background. And talk to us about maybe one or two of the big issues that you guys are tackling now.
Well, if you were to take air quality, for example, one of the things that's happening is we've been leading a team appointed by us and the governor over the last couple of years. So the movement to get the much cleaner fuels for our cars, we help support and obtained support from the legislature to now have, as of 2018, ultra-low NOx water heaters, which will substantially cut the precursor gases from PM2.5. We are constantly working with cities and towns and the region on better development patterns so people can drive shorter distances or walk or ride their bike for the things they need. So we're working on sort of a broad range of strategies across air quality, and a lot is happening in Utah to improve air quality, but we're encouraging people to buy the newer, cleaner cars as soon as they can and to take the voluntary steps that we can all take to make the air cleaner. So we're a group that works not only on what regulations would matter, but more importantly, what we as people can do in our own personal lives So air quality is just one example of the 11 topics we worked on as we brought people together to bring together a vision for Utah for 2050, air quality, water, urban, what I would call urban form, recreation, public lands, and so on. So we work across a broad range of projects, helping keep a strategic vision for the future.
Can you give us an example of an engagement at a local level? In other words, where you met with or dealt with a particular community about a particular problem and the kind of result you got by doing that?
Yeah, we just actually finished in the last 6 months a vision with the town of Layton, which has is one of the old historic pioneer towns that has grown, then received an Air Force base and has been through all of the phases of development and has a much more older mall area in need of redevelopment. They've had a lot of housing, and the questions were raised about should they preserve sort of the fingers of the mountain range that come down and almost go towards the or to the lakes and so on. So we worked with them on a vision looking out of, to the future about, you know, what kind of economic development should they have, how should they change their residential development patterns, what kind of trails and green space should they have long term, how do they take advantage of the front runner stop they have, and so on. So that's if you go online and just Google vision for Layton, you can find that vision.
So, Robert, I was looking at your 2016 annual report, which I thought was extremely well done. And one of the things you highlight in that annual report is your cornerstone projects. And the first one you list is the Point of the Mountain with the jail relocation. Obviously, a huge opportunity for Utah to do something significant there, something that could be meaningful. And we can look back two decades from now and say, wow, you know, we put quality thought into that. We did it right, and it's made a difference for the state of Utah. What is Envision Utah hoping will happen for that opportunity?
Well, Envision Utah was selected by the Point of the Mountain Development Commission, created by the legislature, to do a long-range strategic vision for this area. And so we're not only looking at the prison site, which is about 600 acres, but we're looking at the total of about 20,000 undeveloped acres in the northern part of Utah County and the southern part of Salt Lake County. And all of that's going to fill in just because of the growth pressures over the next 30 years. The question is, can we do it more strategically? Can we do it in a way that assists traffic flowing through this area? Can we design a wonderful place for people to live, work, and play, to attract the high continue to attract the high-tech jobs? And so we're leading sort of the public involvement side of that. We've spent the last 6 months listening to literally thousands of stakeholders. And it's been a tremendous opportunity for us to get a sense for what the public wants in this area. Now we're in the process of developing long-range scenarios. We just recently released the baseline of one way it might look in 2050 if we're not strategic about what we do.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, there's a chance to really do a nice, thoughtful development there. I was in the Daybreak community over the weekend visiting a friend of mine. And, you know, every time I go down there, now I know it's controversial and some people feel differently than I do, but I just love how organized that was and how thoughtful and, you know, how walkable that community is. And, hopefully we have an opportunity to do something that's thoughtful like that and captures some of the essence of that. You know, another issue as I was looking at your cornerstone projects, one of the things living here in Utah that's striking for me and I really enjoy is the combination of having a thriving city like Salt Lake City, having communities like Park City, but then also having this rural experience so close to us. For me, it's therapeutic to be able to get out into rural Utah. It's such a different life there. And to have that 20 or 30 minutes away from Park City or even closer. And I noticed that one of your cornerstone projects was what you guys called having a thriving rural Utah. How are you guys hoping to help out and to help rural Utah continue to grow and to thrive?
Right. And if you're looking to real rural Utah, that's different than looking to sort of the communities are getting the wave of growth. They're on the edge of the urban form right now, and growth is going to hit them. Truly rural Utah has really three different economic ways to strengthen their economy and to have a good quality of life. One is the economy built around recreation. Another one, it has to do with agriculture. The third one has to do with oil, gas, minerals, and so on. So the need for those things and the attitudes about them have been shifting in recent years. But one of the ways to preserve rural Utah is actually to be supportive of agriculture. One of the things we've missed in the past is, I think, the opportunity to preserve more of the agriculture on the Wasatch Front. And Utahns now really strongly support taking steps to make certain that Utah does not lose its ability to produce food, high-quality local food for our children and grandchildren, as well as food in case there were some kind of major emergency. So there really has been a shifting attitude over the last few years about agriculture. And so making certain that we're doing for rural Utah what we can to help them have a strong agricultural economy, to help them have really a strong recreation economy and the kinds of additional amenities they'll need for that. I mean, one of the reasons you enjoy rural Utah is when you get there, there's a trail or a path or a place to camp. And as we're double the population of Utah, we're going to need to make sure we double those kind of facilities as well, and that we open up other areas for recreation as well as preserving wilderness and other places for, you know, the true getaway from it all. So thriving rural Utah is, and I think the governor is pushing this theme as well right now, trying to create 25,000 new jobs in rural Utah. And those are the three industry clusters you can do it. So we can support them in recreation, agriculture, and where appropriate, then oil, gas, minerals, and so on.
Robert, you just mentioned the importance of attracting new jobs. And one of the things that I think has been a major driver in the state of Utah for attracting new jobs has been the quality of our educated workforce. And I know that one of your projects has been education. On the one hand, we take great pride and recognize the importance of an educated workforce. And on the other hand, I noticed on your website the reference to something that's very well known, which is the relatively low per capita expenditure per student. How is Utah, and what is Envision Utah doing to help Utah meet the challenge of maintaining and increasing our education workforce, given the current challenge of the relatively low funding rates?
Well, and I think right now we're having a teacher shortage crisis, and one of the things we've been doing in Envision Utah is actually, with the help of stakeholders, running a campaign about the need for doing a number of things better. One of them is what families and caregivers can do in the 0-3 age with really good, very early childhood talking and speaking to your baby, you know, helping them to react with you and to learn from you, to wire their brains better. So lots of things we can do in education. Start very young. That's the latest brain science, and need to be done at that age or you lose the opportunity. Then there's preschool. From that, K through 12, and from what we know from educational experts and from the public in Utah, they view the teacher as the core of that K through 12 process, making sure that we have the right teachers, they're great teachers, and that they stay. And then beyond that, make sure every child is prepared to go on in school and to choose a career where they can do, you really be productive in our society. This high-tech cluster in Utah grew about 7% last year in terms of employment, and we're not producing students prepared for that high-tech cluster at that rate. And so one of the things we tested in the baseline we just released is what if we continue to produce students essentially like we are today without a change? And, you know, most experts tell us that the jobs will start leaving the state. They won't be able to fill their needs here. These companies will start to branch out into other markets and so on to find the people they need. And so there's a big cloud on the horizon, a big warning to us that we really need to make certain Utah students are prepared. And yes, we're at the bottom in terms of per capita spending. On the other hand, we're near the top in terms of household spending. but we need to make certain we're doing the right strategies. And so if you go online and look at our work on that, you'll find a set of core strategies, some of which are free, like the 0 to 3 working and helping wire a baby's brain all the way up through college. And so Utahns have told us clearly in the survey work we did, where 52,000 Utahns answered the survey about 2 years ago, they want Utah to make education number one in the state. They want us to be in the top 10 states in America. They want to make sure every child has great opportunities in their lives. And so we need to continue to do better and better with education. And a lot of additional resources have been going into education over the years, but we're probably going to need to put more resources to the targeted strategies that will really make a difference. So we find in Utah, every time you ask the public, you know, rank the things that are most important for the future, education's at the top. Recently, we asked them to tell us how they thought we were doing, and it ranked at the bottom of the 11 major things they were concerned about. And so Utahns are warning us they want education to be much better for their children and grandchildren.
Robert, I want to circle back to what you were talking about with the tech cluster. Before I do that, I think education is a great example for a question that I have, which is, does your organization try to stay apolitical? And the reason I think education is a great example is there's the ballot initiative to force the state to raise some taxes to bring up, I believe, an extra $700 million a year for the schools. Does your organization try to stay apolitical, or do you guys have an opinion on specifically that ballot initiative?
We are a 501c3 nonprofit, and so our ability to be involved in lobbying or our desire to is very limited. We don't support a specific legal initiative, but what we do support is the fact that Utahns resoundingly told us in the Your Utah, Your Future survey work that they want education at the top of the list. They think more money should go into it if properly targeted to the most highly leveraged strategies.
Okay,
we are supportive. We are supportive of doing those strategies, and Utahns are supportive. So our agenda is made up of what Utahns have told us. But in terms of that specific initiative, you would say we're neutral.
Okay, well said, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I thought that was a great example to mention it. So going back to the tech cluster. You know, it's amazing. I'm now in my early 50s, and 20 years just flies by. And 20 years ago, I lived down at Point of the Mountain, and people had a vision of a tech cluster down in that neck of the woods just because of its location between two premier universities. It's been a lot of fun for me to see that become reality when I go down there. I mentioned I was at Daybreak. I was down in the Point of the Mountain area yesterday. And just seeing the growth that's been there, it's just staggering what can happen over 20 years. As you look at the tech cluster, are there lessons that you pull away that you say, gee, if we had the knowledge that we have today, you know, here's maybe some things we might have been thinking about differently 20 or 30 years ago to have made that development more successful?
Well, we're still at the front end, and I, like you, have watched this for many years. I was an electrical engineering computer science student at the university a long time ago. Ed Catmull, who was the founder of Pixar, was there. John Warnock, founder of Adobe. I mean, David Evans, who founded Evans & Sutherland. So that high-tech cluster has been growing for two generations in the state, and we are the beneficiaries of vision that started really 50-plus years ago. Could we have done things better? Certainly we could have. On the other hand, we've done some pretty smart things. Number one, we've expanded I-15 through there. Number two, in 2003 and 4, Envision Utah led an effort with UDOT to plan the Mountain View Corridor and to move that road up from past 2030 for the first expenditure to where we've actually been building segments of the Mountain View Corridor, and we'll build it faster, which is the western freeway that goes through there. In addition, Envision Utah led the effort publicly to support the transit system. And so we've built rail faster than anywhere in America for the last 15 years. And so the fact that Front Runner, this major 90-mile commuter rail corridor, goes through the middle of our region and right through this area, is an amazing achievement. And so have we been doing well at the infrastructure? Certainly we have. In addition, the Engineering College of the University of Utah used to graduate a couple hundred engineers a year, now graduates. I think they've got 900 students. So you just look at what's happened. So a lot of the foundation has been well laid. And so what our baseline tells us is, yes, we're going to have some challenges with education and with traffic and other things, but that baseline is to now allow us to look at the alternatives to really be strategic for the next 20, 30 years to get it right. So are we a little behind the curve in transportation? I think the growth there, the speed of it, took people by surprise. But we've actually been planning pretty well. We just need to accelerate that planning and make sure we're doing the very best we possibly can. People don't realize that. If you look at major regions around the country, nobody else we are aware of, and I've been to more than 90 regions, have a place for this kind of a job corps, high-tech job corps, right smack in the middle of the region. And so not only have we been doing a lot of things right, but we are well-positioned geographically, as you said, with this special place between two valleys, between two major universities, and so on. And so we're in a very good position looking towards the future to get this right. Could we have been a little faster with some of it? Certainly we could. But I think the handwriting's been on the wall, so to speak, for a long time, and I think a lot of things have happened that have really built a good foundation.
Robert, you mentioned earlier that your survey had looked at some 11 different categories and that education and ranked near the top of the concerns for the people of Utah. What are the other top concerns that came up in that survey?
Yeah, I think the other one that always is the top is air quality. And we did a survey of 1,200 of the new young high-tech employees in that area recently. And when you ask them, what is the number one thing that might make you leave the state for a job somewhere else because they could go, air quality was listed as number one. And when we did the public surveys, broader public surveys, about a year and a half ago, the same thing was true, that air quality is at the top. And that's why we are working so hard with others to emphasize, let's get to the cleaner cars. Let's make sure our cities and towns are designed to cut down the amount of traffic we have. Let's make sure our new buildings, and our baseline basically shows us that if we, whatever gains we will get from cleaner cars, we will give up if we don't make our buildings a lot cleaner. They will become the dominant source of the PM2.5 gases. And so air quality is clearly number two for Utahns. Then there's water, and we've just helped facilitate over the last 4 years a proposed water strategy that was delivered to the governor. 41 members of that task force, including a full spectrum of environmentalists, business leaders, and water purveyors and so on, all of them agreed finally on a major strategy for the state moving forward on water. So water is always at the top of the list. Then it's education and it's economic development, job creation, creating the right kind of environment overall for jobs to come to Utah. Now, we care about a lot of other things in Utah, recreation and public lands and so on. But at the core of things we want are those two environmental issues, water, air, and jobs and education for the future.
Robert, those are water and air quality. Water supply and air quality are two great examples. You know, it just shows the complexity and how some of these issues can be at odds with each other. You look at water, at least nationwide, the largest use of water is for agriculture. You know, I thought it was going to be for watering our lawns. Turns out that's tiny in comparison to agriculture. It takes a lot of water to raise cows, to provide the beef that all of us like to eat in our meals. So water supply, we think of it as, you know, all the new people. I think your report says there's predicted to be 2.5 million new residents in the state of Utah by 2050. That's a lot of new people. It's going to require a lot of water. The other one, air quality. You know, solving air quality with fuel is difficult. We're probably not a large enough state that we can have our own formula put together for gasoline. If you're California, if you're large like that, you probably can. Probably the solution there is us driving electric cars. You know, what's interesting with the electric cars is they also are coming with the self-driving aspects of things. And I suspect that's going to have a negative impact on rural Utah because being the fuel stops and the truck stops is part of the economy there. So what's your thoughts on the electric cars and the autonomy? Are you guys worried at all about the impact on rural Utah of, you know, the truck stops are populated by truckers? If our trucks in the future don't have truckers, then maybe they don't need truck stops.
I'm not so sure. Now, this is my view, not so much in Vision Utah. We're studying, as part of the transportation questions of Point of the Mountain, what will be the impact of the autonomous cars. But electric cars have less range than a gas car, and that may change a little bit over time. We're getting somewhat better batteries, but the need for a car to stop and recharge is going to be closer together, right, at least for the foreseeable future, than it is for a gas car. So it's hard to say what impact that will have. People are going to have to stop and have lunch and charge their cars. And so right now we don't even have a charging system built across America that's very efficient. We're certainly going to see that in the years ahead, and I think that will bring a different kind of spatial development patterns along the freeways. It actually could bring back some places we've lost over time. I want to go back to the mention about water for a minute. We've had some amazing things have happened with respect to our water consumption. In Utah, we now know that the lot size for single-family homes has been cut in half in the last 20 years. In other words, we're all living on less land. And with that, the amount of outdoor watering per person has also been cut in half. And so just like agriculture is a dominant use of water in the state, if you look at single-family homes, the dominant use of water is outdoor watering. And it's being reduced not just because of conservation measures, but a lot of it's being reduced because we're just watering less grass. And so one of the predictions we see that will likely come true is that the density, the number of housing units per acre is going to continue to climb over time. And as that happens, there'll be less watering per capita outside to keep the bluegrass green, plus, obviously, better techniques for xeriscaping and so on. So we're actually seeing a significant amount of water conservation in the state as our urban form is evolving.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, density, as we know here in Park City, density comes with its own set of issues as well.
Yep,
Robert, unfortunately, we need to wrap up this interview. We very much appreciate you being our guest this morning.
One other thing is to go to pointofthemountainfuture.org. Give us your comments on the baseline. Look at what it may look like in 2050 and give us your best suggestions on what future you would like to see, because now we're working on scenario alternatives to that baseline.
Okay, well, we hope our listeners do just that. 2050 is going to be here before we all know it. And Robert, we appreciate Envision Utah helping us to think about what we want 2050 to look like.
Great. Thanks so much, Doug.
All right, you're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. Up next, we have Dawn Holtz. She is working at the Christie Sports over at the new location by the new Whole Foods. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. Please stay tuned.
This is Allison Kulo with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau provides your business with benefits, from lodging projections, educational videos, group sales leads, and a listing on the top travel site for Park City, and much more. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining can be found at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and KPCW supporter.
Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital and New Park Town Center, with new retail spaces and a year-round community development. Information about New Park Town Center is available at 801-303-5440.
Good morning and welcome back to Mountain Money. We're pleased to have in studio our next guest, Don Holtz of Christie Sports. And I've been excited for this interview because I have a question I've been waiting to ask you. One of the great things in my experience about Christie Sports is the quality of the equipment that you stock. And although even with the best equipment, I have a lot of trouble keeping up with Doug Wells on the slopes. My question for you is, who gets to pick that equipment? How does it work? And how does that process evolve over time?
Well, it's a culmination between our buyers, both hard goods and soft goods, and the managers. And together, you know, we test the equipment, we look at the equipment, and we make decisions on what we want to sell people.
But that's the part that interests me. What I want to know is who gets to try the stuff out. When and where do they get to do it? I mean, are there demo days where you guys see next year's equipment first? How does that work?
We have demo days usually in January and February to look at next year's equipment, and those decisions are usually made about mid-February.
For a year in advance?
Yes.
So, Don, you're talking about it very matter-of-factly. Mm-hmm. To Roger and I, this sounds like really exciting and fun stuff. I'm guessing you've been with Christie's for a long time. When did you join them?
I've been with Christie's Sports since about 2001.
Okay, so 16 years,
yeah.
As we were talking about with our first guest, you know, 20 years flies by very quickly. You're going to be hitting your 20-year anniversary. And you were managing the Christie Sports up at the Deer Valley Resort mm-hmm. previously.
That is my home store. I do manage that store still.
So that's got to be a tough store to manage because it's not open year-round, right?
It is. We're open 7 days a week year-round. We do have that mud season in May and, you know, again in September after the lifts close, but we are open year-round. I have a staff of three up there for the summertime.
Okay, and it must be totally crazy and completely busy during ski season, your busy season.
It's nuts.
Yeah, and so how about staffing? How do you do that? And I understand it's getting tougher and tougher each year to hire seasonal employees.
It is, and that's why we're expanding, looking to, you know, build our team of year-round employees. Year-round employees make everything easier. And we're lucky we have a huge retention. We have people that have worked with us now for 10, 12 years.
Or 16 years in
yeah.
your case.
And so we have a really veteran staff, and that's the goal.
Well, Christy, historically, I've always thought of this as the place to go and buy next year's skis. I know that you're expanding a fairly new product line with the addition of your new job as patio manager.
Yes.
You want to talk to us a little bit about what's going on there?
So our new location out at Kimball Junction in the new Canyon Corners development where Whole Foods is going has been quite exciting. It's our first new store build in Utah. We've had a bunch of them in our Colorado locations, but this is our first new store build in Utah, and it's stunning. And as a company, we've been doing patio for about 40 years, and I've been doing patio with Christie Sports. We've been doing it about 10 or 11 years now in this marketplace out of our Salt Lake showroom.
So Roger and I both had, to be candid, in the green room prior to the interview, Roger and I were talking, and we were both surprised about the movement of ski shops and bike shops into patio furniture. Help us understand, how is that a natural fit for you guys?
It's very natural because the seasons don't collide. Ski season starts when patio is ending. Patio starts when ski season's starting to wrap up. And patio really goes year-round, but the bulk of it is when ski season's not happening. And it gives an opportunity to have a year-round product that we can offer our guests because our same patio customers are our ski customers. You know, and I like to patio all summer after a long, hard winter of skiing.
Yeah, I guess one of the reasons that it doesn't seem like a natural fit to me, and I'm not a patio furniture expert, right? Fortunately, patio furniture, in my family's case, lasts 5, 6, 7 years, so we don't have to worry about it too long. But I think about mountain bikes and skiing as, you know, the technology is always different. There's an upgrade cycle so that I can keep up with guys like Roger when I go skiing because I need the latest and greatest. I don't feel that way with patio furniture. Is that an accurate thought on my end or no?
Well, in our environment up here, especially with a lot of the new builds, the remodels, the mixing of cultures that are coming into our city, patio it's a lot like fashion. You know, it's an element of your home. It's an element of your personality. And with the folks up here who really like to entertain and have parties, it's really a natural fit. And then with our restaurants and our country clubs, you know, all
so
those
their
nice
upgrade
patios.
Cycle is quite a bit sooner than mine would be, it sounds like.
You know, we're hoping, we sell heirloom furniture, so we're hoping that people are going to buy this once and maybe upgrade the cushions 10 years down the road to change out their color scheme, you know, and keep this stuff out of the landfills, you know, buy the good stuff that's going to last.
Dawn, over the weekend, my family was telling me, it's July, time to start thinking about next year's ski season. I think our audience is probably not quite as obsessed with equipment changes as I am, but many of them are. Tell us what's going on this year in skis and snowboards. Are we seeing any major or significant technological advances or trends that you can talk to us about?
We're seeing a few different things. We're seeing a lot of the use of lighter woods, carbons, a lot of hollowing out of cores to make the ski a little bit more dynamic and fun. We're seeing some interesting tip and tail shapes coming out, as we have over the past few years. We're seeing a little bit less rocker, which is that really severe tip and tail flare-up. We're seeing a little bit more closer to the snow, you know, so that more dynamic surfy feel that, you know, we all like. And, you know, that nice rebound and pop and energy. And, you know, ski boots have been just getting better and better, so they're definitely... you know, the lasts, the liners, the warmth of the boot. I mean, everything's been upgrading and getting better as the years go on. And then clothing, well, we know that fabrics just get lighter and warmer and more waterproof as the years go on.
Yep. Making the skis lighter as somebody that teaches a handful of days kind of part-time is a fun thing to do at Deer Valley. Over the Christmas season when I've been teaching 5 or 6 days in a row, boy, having skis that are a couple pounds lighter makes a big, big difference when you've got to, you know, carry them from the downstairs locker room upstairs. So I'm curious, the new Whole Foods retail space, that's really premium space.
It is. We're excited.
You guys are located also at Deer Valley, as we mentioned earlier. That's really expensive space. Is that the model? Frankly, I'm surprised that there's not... a strategy where you're away from the premium real estate, you're maybe in what I would call Class B locations, and the customers come to you. How important is it to be where the customer is going naturally anyways?
Well, it's always ideal. You know, you want to be...
It's ideal, but it's expensive.
It can be. It can be, for sure. Deer Valley, well, we've been up there for a long time. We were the very first retail entity in Silver Lake when that was all budding. The Goldner Hirsch was going in, and the Tumont Servin buildings, the Royal Plaza, Stein's. And so we've been up there for a long time. And we've taken more space. We have our kids' store up there, and we've expanded over the years. And space is expensive. And we actually fit a lot of things into a very tight space. Our new store, it's quite nice. We have giant backstock rooms, which are going to help, you know, have the product here when customers need it during these busy times. And I think it's going to take a lot of pressure off, you know, some of the other, our in-town shop. It's on people's way. You know, they're going to stop at the Whole Foods, maybe pick up some rental skis, pick up some, you know, things they need and head on to their lodging.
You know, Don, you said something that I wasn't aware of, that Christie's was the first retailer up at Silver Lake. That was a risky thing to do. You go up there now, and of course, it's coveted space.
Oh, yeah.
But at the time, it was risky. You didn't know how successful that would be. I would argue the Whole Foods location is still in that place. We think it's going to be wildly successful, but we don't know. What do you think it is about Christie's culture that makes you as a company comfortable signing a long-term lease for a space like that with the hope that it's going to be a very successful location?
Well, what makes us successful is our people, our culture. And we put a lot of pride into that. We take really good care of our employees because we want our employees to take really good care of our guests. And we pride ourselves on customer service. We have the best gear and the best people to sell it to you.
And you talked, I asked you a question about skiing equipment. Now I have to ask you a question about snowboarding equipment.
Oh.
Okay, and what's going on there? Because, you know, for some of us do go both ways down the mountain.
Well, unfortunately, you're talking to probably the one person that only goes one way. Snowboard for me has always been a learning experiment, and I'll definitely pick a little bit more of that up. In every store, we do have a snowbird expert, And I am definitely not that person.
I suppose that comes of being at the Deer Valley store for all those years. It's precluded you from learning this important skill.
It has. I've actually never snowboarded.
So Don, we've only got time for one or two more questions. But I've driven by the Whole Foods. I've seen the Christie's location. Are you guys open out by the new Whole Foods?
We have. We opened on July 1st. And it's been a wildly successful month. And the store is beautiful. I mean, you walk in and you want to spend some time there. You want to check out the patio furniture and anticipate in another month and a half here, it's going to be full of ski equipment. And it's going to be a cool transition.
I will definitely go check it out. Last question. Anything else you want to share with us about Christie Sports and the coming ski season and the end of the mountain biking season?
Well, we're definitely wrapping up right now. We're renting mountain bikes up in Deer Valley through Deer Valley's Lift Served operations, which is just after Labor Day, 7 days a week. The store out at Kimball's open 7 days a week. And as we transition into ski season, that doesn't change. You know, we take stuff in and we're here for you guys, even in the off season.
And I'm sure everybody will want to know, will there be a sale of rental bikes at the end of the season this year?
We haven't decided on that yet.
Although I've been here 11 years. I've been here 11 years, and I don't think there's been a season where that hasn't happened. So
yeah.
They are expensive.
They are.
Don, thank you for spending time with us. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a moment with our next guest, Susan Lyle from Natural Grocers.
Gordo here. And I'm Larry with All Resort Group, a proud sponsor of KPCW.
Since 1974, we've been part of this community with shared ride, private van, and SUV service for our customers.
Reservations available at allresort.com or 649-3999.
We move people.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch counties.
Good morning, and welcome back to Mountain Money. Our next guest is Susan Lyle from the Natural Grocers company that is opening a brand new location in Heber. Good morning, Susan, and thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
Susan, Natural Grocers is, I take it, new to our Park City, greater Park City area. Tell us a little bit about the company's overall footprint and what it is you do.
What we do is we're a natural food store. We truly are a natural food store. So we've been in business since 1955. We have about 142 stores. All of those stores are west of the Mississippi. Our headquarters and our home office is in Lakewood, Colorado. So we have the highest standards for natural foods in the industry, and our stores are absolutely terrific. Everything we carry is all natural. Everything in the produce department is USDA certified organic. All of our dairy products come from non-confinement dairies. We have an extensive selection of vitamins and supplements and a terrific body care department.
So, Susan, our show's producer, Bob Hendricks, lives in the Heber Midway area, which is how the new location was brought to our attention. He also arranged to have you come in as a guest, so thanks to Bob for that. But tell us, I know the location's not open yet, and those are often moving targets when you're still in the construction phase, but when is that expected to open? And tell our listeners where in the Heber area you're going to be located.
You know, I'm going to have a little trouble telling you where we're located in the Heber area. I am in Lakewood, Colorado, and I haven't been out to Heber yet.
How about an opening date? Do you have a feel for that?
I do have an opening date, and that is November 1st.
Okay, November 1st. That's coming quickly, and Bob Hendricks is here in studio, and he can tell us where it's going to be.
Right next door to Labrum Ford on Main Street.
Okay, so
at the end of the road there.
How big will the new location be?
You know, our stores vary a little bit in size, but most of them are about 14,000, 15,000 square feet of sales floor space.
Okay, and Bob had shared with us this location is going to be two stories. Is there going to be shopping on both levels, or is the second level for offices or for rent?
I believe the second floor is for offices, and I don't know about rent. I think the store will just be on the first level.
Okay, because I know there's very few, you know, two levels is hard to pull off in grocery. Although it's kind of clever what people have done. They have those escalators, and alongside they have the lift for your cart. I was in New York City earlier this summer. There's a couple stores there, and we are fortunate that we don't have to do that. So, Susan, you are the recruiting manager for Natural Grocers. I'm assuming what that means is you're going to help staff up the store. And have you started to do that, and what kind of challenges have you faced doing that?
Well, we're just getting started on the staffing. So all of the open positions are posted on our website currently, and we're encouraging people to go ahead and apply. We have 8 management positions in every store. We also have a position for a nutritional health coach. That person is our nutrition educator for both our staff in the store and for our communities. So we're looking for all of our Good For You crew positions. Those are our store general staff, cashiering, and working in the departments. And the challenge we always face is trying to find people that have a lot of nutrition knowledge. But we don't hire only people with nutrition knowledge. We have a great nutrition education program for our employees. So if people are interested in exploring a nice, green, clean retail career in natural foods, we'd love to talk to them.
Many of our listeners here in the Park City area are very interested in nutrition and food. And I guess what I'd like to hear a little bit about is your perception about what's going on in terms of new trends in the natural food industry. What's different? What would I find different today in your stores than I would have found 2 years ago?
Well, you would find more variety, in my opinion, in the stores. There are a lot of great manufacturers, and we try to keep up on those trends and bring in those new products. So in every department, all of the time, I personally am exploring new products. We have just some really terrific products throughout the store. We have a great line of naturally raised meat products. As I said earlier, all of the products in our dairy department come from non-confinement dairies. So you'll find some terrific cheeses and things like that in those departments that are wonderful. In the vitamin and supplement department, we have over 10,000 SKUs, so we have all kinds of really great support in the vitamin department to help people choose the supplements that they may be wanting to try.
So, Susan, healthy grocery, the natural grocery space has always been kind of a niche that has allowed higher profitability. The grocery store business is brutally competitive. As is even within your protected niche, has always been not quite as brutally competitive, but still very, very competitive. You are obviously doing a lot of things right, or you wouldn't have 142 stores. You sometimes can get to a dozen stores before you realize you're not doing things right, but you certainly don't get to 140 plus stores, having started in the 1950s. Without doing a lot of things right. You know, your space has gone through a very, very interesting summer. About a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, Amazon announced the acquisition of Whole Foods. How do you think that impacts your company?
You know, I don't think we know for sure how that impacts our company yet. But I can tell you that this company, for the past, you know, 62 years has stayed really true to our founding principles. We believe in offering the highest quality foods and supplements that are truly all natural and offering those at the lowest cost possible. So we offer nutrition education, we take great care of our employees, and we try to give back to the communities. And what we've found over the years is that when we stay true to those principles, our stores are profitable And so I think that's kind of our business strategy right now, is not to worry too much about what's going on with everybody else and just continue to operate our stores the way that we have for the last, 60-plus years.
One of the things that would differentiate to me a brick-and-mortar-type operation from an Amazon-type operation is the ability to deliver what you've just referenced a couple times, which is nutrition education. Talk to us a little bit about how you offer that and how our listeners could access some education on the nutrition side.
Well, ahead of the store opening, people could access that nutrition information right from our website. We have a terrific website with lots of information there. In our stores, we have that nutritional health coach. We have stores open in the Salt Lake City area if people want to kind of check us out ahead of time. And in those stores, we have this nutritional health coach, and that person puts on some presentations. They do some private counseling sessions. They consult with customers on the floor. And they're very active in reaching out into the community. So if there are groups in the community that have specific interests, they're willing to set up programs for those individuals and those groups.
So go ahead, Susan.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say they also spend a lot of time educating the rest of the staff in the store. So we have some really knowledgeable staff members that can also help our customers.
Susan, I wanted to thank you for spending time with us this morning. We need to wrap it up at this point. Our guest has been Susan Lyle from the Natural Grocers Organization, which will be opening a new store in Heber in November. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a moment. Thanks again, Susan, and have a great day.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. That was a fun show. I hope my normal co-host, Renee Bodley, is having a great vacation. Thanks again, Roger Goldman, for stepping in and being our guest co-host. I also want to thank our great sponsors for Mountain Money. We couldn't do shows like this without the support of organizations like these. We thank you. They include Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, All Resort Express, Park City Mountain and Apex Residences, and Viridian Park City, Columbus Pacific Properties.
And I want to thank Doug for giving me the opportunity to spend the time with all of you this morning. I want to thank our listeners. And most of all, I want to thank our guests, Robert Groh, the president of Envision Utah, Don Holtz from Christie Sports, and Susan Lyle from Natural Grocers.
You know, Roger, I think a great show, and really enjoyed the Envision Utah conversation and the conversation on clean air. I joke with my friends in Salt Lake City about the air quality down there, and they remind me it's guys like me driving down from Park City that is part of the problem. We're blessed to be able to live here in Park City, but it's complex. It creates part of the air quality problem.
And the interrelationship between, and you mentioned this, I think nationally the greatest contributors to air quality problems are cows. In other words, it's agriculture is a huge factor in the release of methane gas.
Yeah, actually, I didn't talk about that. I don't know if I believe that or not. I've been told that, but it just seems hard to believe.
I've been given that. I've read that in a number of places, and I believe that there are statistics that really show that, which is extraordinary. So you think cows are using water, cows are emitting gas, and yet we're hooked on them.
Definitely water usage. You know, another big thing that happened over the weekend in this town is the soccer tournament. I think the soccer organization did a great job there. There were almost 500 teams here in town. We are good at welcoming guests from out of town. I think we did a great job there. So kudos to Park City for doing that. You're listening to KPCW on and Mountain Money. NPR News is next.